Hello there, you're listening to another episode of Inside the Tech Ecosystem, a podcast where we'll bring you fun and insightful topics about tech and its ecosystem in Nigeria. I'm your host, David Chuka, and I'm joined by my co-host, Imani. We're changing your name on this show. Emmanuel is a little bit long, then you now add a Wotunde again. Like, look at, see how short David Chuka is. David Chuka. That's four syllables.
Say your full name.
No. So, from now on, you're Imoni. Imoni from now on.
All right. I like it.
We've not recorded in a while, actually. I feel like we say this every time we start a new episode.
I think you say this every time.
Guys, let me confess why I say it. Because I actually don't get work, right? Podcasting, starting to a full-time hobby. So anytime we don't record in a long time, I kind of miss it. So when we come back, I'm like, oh, finally. Hi, guys. Oh, my God. I missed you. Man, what's been good now? What's happening? What's up with you?
I've been okay. I've been out and about quite a while, but I'm settling now, hoping not to travel again for like a month because it gets tiring sometimes because you're on the road. My normal schedule is like upside down right now, so I feel like I'm out of place. But yeah, it's settling down.
It's affecting everybody. Let me just tell you, it's affecting me too. But it's all good. You didn't ask, but I'm going to tell you. I've been all right. I've been all right. Yeah. That's basically it.
So if I was asked, that's what you tell me.
I live a pretty boring life. Everyone listening, we have a very special guest amongst us. And he goes by the name Lord Ali. Yeah, he goes by the name Lord Ali. Apparently, he has been knighted in England by the... I will not say the word before people come for me. Yeah, but yeah, he has traveled far and wide, you know, preaching the gospel of cybersecurity. Ali, I'm going to stop talking now. Please, I need you to introduce yourself. Full name this time. I call you Ali, but what's your full name? And, you know, just let people know that young.
No, I'm Ali. And my full name is... Why do I tell you my government name anyway? My full
tell
name
them
is
now,
Aliyu
please, in case Yisa. People are looking for you. And I know people are looking for you because you're a hacker.
I'm not a hacker. Just because I'm into cybersecurity doesn't mean I'm a hacker. That's
tell us.
A common misconception. But yeah, how much do you want to know, really? I do cybersecurity. I started as a software engineer, actually. Did lots of abandoned projects, abandoned at different stages.
Yep. Sounds about
finally,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of expired domains there. My final year, I finally got together with a couple of friends, started a startup, managed to run it for about 2 years before we, kicked the can, so to say. I'm not even sure if that's the right figure of speech to use. And then after that, I worked for some time as a software engineer before, moving to the UK to do a master's in cybersecurity. Security is always something I've been interested in, even before the master's. It's like, I was always the paranoid guy in the room when, software developers generally are not like super conscious about security, right? I was always the extra paranoid guy. Oh, what if someone had this? Or what if someone did this? After the master's, I wasn't able to find a job in cybersecurity. So I went back to software development for a while, just to get the money. I have to survive. I have to pay bills.
Yeah, one way or the other.
Even though it was tough to get a role in cybersecurity, right? I actually got an offer.
Really?
But the company was toxic, so I couldn't take it. So I took the software development option, and I was there for a while. But now I'm into cybersecurity, and I'm also running a cybersecurity startup called Pheasant. Shameless plug. We're launching Psychia next end of this month or early next month.
You're launching
a new product.
Nice.
Yeah.
Under Fezzant as well. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just for people who are like interested in cybersecurity. We, you know, it's like a career focused platform where you can learn, do practical tasks, and hear from like actual people that have worked in the industry, sharing their experience.
I think that's important, actually.
Yeah. That's a very long and scattered intro, but yeah.
No, you would actually give us the more arranged intro, but I want to make a quick confession. Every time I've come across your startup, I pronounce it like a Frenchman. I pronounce it as Frozen.
Yeah, I know. it sounds
more sophisticated, and I think you guys should actually adopt, you know, pronouncing it like that as well. But where do you work? Enough, I work at the Frozen. <You know>?
Frozen.
I just feel like it's a bit more.
Actually, like, I've gotten that, you know, talking to people ask me, is it a French thing? Is it pheasant? And I'm like, no, it's pheasant. It's just the name of a bird. It's not that interesting.
I actually didn't know that was the name of a bird. I should look that up.
Yeah.
Ali, thank you so much for the intro. That was quite the intro. Told us a lot, and we still want to know more because, I mean, we have a lot to talk about today. But before we get into that, we would like to know how you got into tech in the first place, right? I mean, like your origin story. What's your origin story like? Did you just wake up one morning and be like, I think cybersecurity is going to be a thing in 20 years from now? So, how did that happen? How did you get into tech, you know, school, education? Why did you decide to do cybersecurity in your master's? All of that. So, I'd like to hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think I touched on part of that in my intro, but yeah, let me start from the beginning. I can't remember when actually, but I can't remember exactly when I started getting interested in tech, but I know I've always been interested in computers. Courtesy of my dad, we always had at least one at home. And you know, we used to like play games, play with like Microsoft tools, like PowerPoints, do all sorts of weird stuff, and like experiment. I've always been like, you know, interested in computers. At some point, I've had like so many different goals. At some point, I wanted to like design microchips for some reason. At some point, I wanted to be a computer engineer. At some point, I wanted to, you know, I wanted to be an ethical hacker. So I wanted to do cybersecurity. So, you know, changing dreams of every. Like as my mood sees fit, but most of the time it's always consistent with, you know, computers. I've never thought of I want to be a doctor and, you know, all that stuff. But I actually applied to do computer science, which I'm glad I didn't get.
That's actually quite rude. First of all, you have to explain yourself. You can't just say that.
Yes. Yeah. No. I'm explaining myself. So I applied to computer science. The cutoff mark was 200, and I had 195, I think.
So that wasn't our fault then.
Yeah. Chillax. Let me get there. So I had to look for like something else to do. And I found out about ICS, Information and Communication Science. And I saw like the course content and everything. So it was looking, you know, reasonable. I was like, oh, nice, this isn't bad. And then I started. Then I started hearing what you guys are doing in computer science.
Oh my God.
I had only You asked for the origin story. I had only 2 maths courses I was doing for some reason. They made sure everyone did maths in 100 level in first year. And that was 2 semesters, right? And I passed with a 40, like, on the dot in the first semester. The second semester, I failed it. I had to do it again the next year. And you guys were doing it, like, every single
semester. We did, semester. Like, 8.
You had, like, yeah. And you guys did physics, freaking yes. Plant biology. I'm like, what the hell is this?
Plant biology. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I was like, you know what? I'm actually, I'm doing 1 math and 1 statistics in my first year, and that's it. I'm not doing any math again. And I'm like, yeah, I'm actually glad I didn't make the cutoff points.
Okay, I understand, you know, I understand. Well, you see,
things work out.
I think things do work out, actually. Yeah. So, you know, what inspired after school, after uni, what inspired, you know, going into cybersecurity for masters?
Yeah, again, so like during uni, you know, in our first year, we just gathered, you know, a couple of guys. One of my secondary school friends said, oh, you're interested in programming, right? You can program, right? Like, yeah. Yeah, small, what are you doing? Then he was like, oh, I have a couple of guys that are interested also, and they want to, like, you know, learn together and build, you know, learn together basically and do stuff. And then he took me to their hostel. It was like the tech version of when you get introduced to the cartel, basically. So we started learning, you know, how to code and everything. Had so many ideas for projects that we abandoned at the idea stage. Sometimes we actually started working on it and abandoned it. Sometimes we actually had a website up and somehow ended up getting abandoned. And yeah, so what inspired me to do cybersecurity in my master's? I guess when the opportunity to do a master's came, I remembered that, oh, cybersecurity is something I've always been interested in. And yeah, it was a no-brainer for me. Even though, like, I could have gone and done software engineering, because that's what I was doing. But it's like the same thing, more of the same thing. So yeah. I wanted something different.
Something different, yeah. Okay.
There was also the option of data science that for some reason I was considering. Then I was like, wait, sit down. Do you like statistics? Do you like maths? No. Then I'm not applying for data science. that was my decision making process.
What uni did you end up going to?
University of Salford.
Okay. All right, cool.
Not Stanford. Salford.
Yeah, we got that, bro. We got that. Thank you.
I've actually told people, like, when I was telling someone, asked like, oh, what university are you going to? I was like, Salford. Like, Stanford. No, relax.
I don't think people say University of Stanford. I think they say Stanford University. So that should actually.
Anyway. Yeah, that's how I decided to do cybersecurity in my master's, and you know, that's the rest they say is.
How would you define cybersecurity?
Cybersecurity is just it's very broad, but the main guiding principle is protecting you know, computer systems from malicious attacks or unauthorized use. And the main principles of cybersecurity are confidentiality, integrity, and availability. You know, keeping information confidential, making sure the right people have the right access, making sure information isn't tampered with, and making sure it's available to, like, the legitimate users, basically.
So cybersecurity is not limited to, like, the internet?
Exactly. It's not limited to the internet. It might be local networks. It might be anything that's related to protecting, you know, cyber systems, which is computer systems, network systems. There's also, there's information security, which is more broad in that it covers not just things that are computer related or cyber related. It also covers, information that is stored on paper, like physical access and all that stuff. So information security is like the broader term.
Okay.
But
that makes sense.
Pretty much being used interchangeably nowadays to the utmost disgust of some OGs.
I understand. Just like when people say, you're not a software engineer, you're a software developer. Please get your terms right.
Yeah.
I don't think they're related, but yeah.
It's probably related now. People, it's just said utmost disgust. Like people use this interchangeably in our field.
Like developer and engineer it's practically the same thing.
Yes, like, but like for some us. Many people don't
which people? I've not come across anyone that's like
that's sad. I have a friend that has a software engineering degree. Those who want
to be called engineers that would take a pee.
I have a friend.
The OGs don't really care.
Some OGs care. I have a friend that has a software engineering degree.
Maybe they should reconsider being an OG.
I didn't say she was an OG. Wait, let me know. Okay. Let me just stop talking in case she listens to this.
All right. So Ali, do you think people are taking cybersecurity as seriously as they should? Before you answer, I already know that you don't think so. But like, how dangerous like would it be like if people keep on taking it the way they are currently taking it?
Well, the thing is that, that's the answer, of course. And the thing is that the problem started why we're in the mess that we're in now. Problem started because the bare bones, right? Like the initial setup of software, hardware, like everything that you know that formed the basis of what we are doing today, were not designed with security in mind. Because initially there wasn't really hacking like that, you know, like it was just, we're connected and we're going to do this, we're going to do that. So a lot of things were built without security being the main focus. And then now we just have to plug the gaps, really. And another problem is that training of like people in tech, you can become a software developer and you don't know too much about security. You're only just like, just build this stuff. It's working fine. Just need to do my tasks and ship features, which is not our fault, right? It's not your fault. I'm not saying it's anybody's fault. It's just the way it is, which means we end up building more vulnerable systems.
Yeah.
And we have to patch after the fact. Not a lot of people are doing security by design nowadays. And the best security really is like when you're building it from the ground up and not when you're just patching stuff.
Yeah.
Think of it like this. Imagine if, you know, civil engineers and architects, I don't know, like people that build houses and stuff. Imagine if they were trained, but they were not really trained in security, in safety, and they build your house, and it's like, now the safety, trained safety experts can come and look at the house and see, you know, what might make the house come crashing down and collapse, and then fix it. Compare that with how it is currently in building, I think, like, safety is one of the main concerns. Like a building, you won't start building a house or whatever without actually thinking about safety, right? Like it's baked into the actual design. And of course, they still follow up with safety measures as it's being built. So imagine that situation if that wasn't the case. That's what we're in right now.
Can I disagree a bit?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, so regular houses are not secure. So we can easily break into like regular houses.
I wasn't talking about security against like breaking in. I was just using the analogy in terms of safety. Like imagine if they built your house.
Softwares are pretty safe. when I mean safe, I mean, because the analogy says your house should not maybe crumble or something, right?
Yeah.
I use software every day and at least they don't crumble. Do you understand? So yeah, the analogy might not work in that sense.
It's not apples and oranges.
Comparison,
right?
Yeah.
But I think the comparison still goes in the sense that, like, safety in terms of, you know, apps, websites, and basically digital services, is security, basically.
Yeah, that makes
sense. It's not safe. It's not safe to use a website if it's, like, very easy to just bypass everything because your personal details are stored there and, you know, get stolen. But to answer your question, I was onto something there, but I think I went off on a tangent. I think your question was on potential effects of if, like, you know, it continues this way. I think we're going to continue building vulnerable systems. We're going to continue patching. We're going to keep playing catch up because cybersecurity is always evolving. There are, like, different orishi-rishi types of threat actors out there with orishi-rishi different skill levels.
Yeah.
And some of them are actually quite organized. You have, like, underground hacking rings. You have ransomware gangs. Ransomware as a service. It's a real thing, by the way. I'm not kidding.
Oh wow.
Yeah, like you can actually though. Yeah, they have these services where instead of you having to build your own ransomware, let's say you are good at intrusion, right? You are very good at bypassing networks and systems, but you're not good at coding or building ransomware. All you have to do is rent a ransomware from one of those ransomware as a service providers. Hive is one of them. And they license...
Wow.
They license their software to you and they just take a cut.
Is this illegal?
Of course it's illegal.
Like, so why are governments not trying to stop it? Why are people not trying to? Anyway,
there are a lot of
illegal things that are still running. So
exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's the good thing is it's something that is gaining more and more attention. Governments are paying attention now. And a lot of these gangs or organized, not just organized ones, but there are some of them that are state sponsored.
Wow. Right?
Like Russian, Chinese. I'm sure there are some of them are sponsored by some Western countries as well, but you won't see them in Western news, of course.
Of course. Because
every major world power, basically. Yeah, every major world power probably, you know, in my opinion, probably has like some underground shit going down in terms of hacking. I mean, who wouldn't? If your enemies are doing it, you should probably, you know, get your own as well. And yeah, some of them are state-backed, which means it's very difficult to track them down without the cooperation of the governments in the country where they are based. Like, what can you do about it at that point, right? You just have to defend yourself against it and make sure that their targets within your own territory are also, like, well-prepared. The threat is very pervasive. It is growing, like, it's evolving every time. And you can't say we have the perfect security solution for everything because there's so many different threats out there that are, as we get better at securing our systems, they get better at circumventing security measures.
So I'm curious, you know, you mentioned, you know, trying to tackle with this issue from the ground up. So, like, let's say you're building a startup. Let's say you're building a startup on the web. Not a startup, a product. Mm-hmm. A product on the web. And, you know, you mentioned it's more advisable to get your security on lockdown when you're building, not after you've built. So who do you think should be responsible for this? Do you think each and every company should start saying, okay, I've hired my back-end guy. I've hired my back-end or my front-end person. My back-end person now I have to hire my cybersecurity person, right? Or do you think it's something that maybe back-end people should have in their tool set or front-end people or both parties, right? The engineers, like if you're going to become a software engineer or if you're going to become any type of engineer, mobile, you know, whatnot, you have to have cybersecurity on lockdown. Or is this, do we have to go outside and start hiring cybersecurity engineers themselves? You get, I love that. Yeah.
If you ask me, left to me, yes, everybody should hire a cybersecurity person. Yes, more jobs for us. But that's a very good question, right? Very interesting question. We have software engineers should learn, you know, secure development best practices, secure coding principles. Like some of these attacks, like why is SQL injection still a thing in 2022? There's some very advanced SQL injection attacks, but most of the SQL injection attacks that happened in recent times are not advanced at all. Like stuff like that is easy, relatively easy to prevent. So if we have more software developers or software engineers that understand the main risks and they understand how to code securely, how to write secure code, how to prevent these common attacks from happening, that's a good starting point, right? There's the OWASP project. I'm sure you guys might have heard about it. Like stuff like that. Following those best practices, at least to give you like a baseline of security. But it doesn't just start and stop on the application layer, right? Mm. There's the network layer. There's the your infrastructure itself, where that app is being hosted. If it's not configured securely, you know, you've opened more holes. So there's different, you can't focus on just one aspect. You have to have a broad view of like of the security of your platform and implement controls.
So
you need to understand like what kind of data you're collecting, where the data flows, how the data flows through your system, potential loopholes that you might be creating. And all this stuff should be done like at the design level. You need to also do like threat modeling. There's lots of things that you can do to protect your application. Okay. But might as well just hire someone that is responsible for that and that can guide that process.
Okay. So,
but there needs to be at least one, like the person. You have a CTO. Your CTO should know about security.
Probably. Not everybody has a CTO, Shah.
Well, you should have at least one person who is taking ownership of that. They might not be an expert or whatever, but, you know, by doing research and trying to do the best, at least you'll be much better off than just winging it, basically.
I feel you. I actually agree as well. I'm going to talk about some misconceptions, especially I think around software development.
Sorry, one more thing.
No, go on.
Give your software developers access to the Psykia platform where they can learn about cybersecurity.
Don't worry, you have all the time to plug in your products. Don't worry. We still have a couple of things to talk about. But I want to talk about some misconceptions in tech in general. So we have this episode where we talked about was it stereotypes or myths? I don't know which one. What did we talk about? I can't remember. It's been a long time.
I think it's that one.
Yeah.
It's how you guys shoehorn tech into every word for me.
Yes. we call it breaking stereotypes.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. it was mostly my idea because I love concatenating words together. Imado said, no, we're not going to call this episode that. I'm like, please, let's just join the words together. So in that episode, we actually talked about how when we were, or when we got into tech, or when we're, you know, transitioning, well, not transitioning, because we did not transition from anywhere. That's the first thing we did. So when we're getting into tech, you know, we had a lot of friends that, you know, when you told them, oh, you code now, or you're studying computer science, and the first thing that comes to their mind is, ah, hacker, you're a hacker. Can you hack?
Hacker,
can you help me? Can you hack? Yeah, can you help me hack? Blah, blah, blah. So I feel
Can you help me hack my boyfriend's WhatsApp?
Exactly, exactly.
Or like,
please, nobody should hack my WhatsApp.
Or can you? How can I make share my live location but appear in a different location to the other person?
That's so specific.
Yo,
bro,
I had someone invite me to their house when I was still in uni. I had someone invite me to their house, and he asked me, he was basically asking me to, you know, create a phishing site, right? But if you see the way this person explained it, oh my God, it was so sweet.
I've gotten so many of those requests.
And interesting. It was almost like I was building a church website. Nothing is going to go wrong. I just need you to take the person to another place and nobody's going to... He explained it so eloquently. Like, you wouldn't have even thought that this guy wanted to do something illegal, right? He was saying it so nicely. Yeah. When it was just done, I was just like, don't worry, I'll give you a call. Because I was in his house for the first time. How I got there, I don't know. Why I was there, I don't know. I didn't want them to lock me.
I think he's fine for your boy side.
It's a long story. It's a very long story. But that's that. So my question is, I think there's a problem, right? I feel like hacking, right? The concept of hacking, people, you know, breaking into people's cyber properties. It's more popular than cybersecurity itself. I feel like a lot of young people I'm not saying this is like definite, but a lot of young people may actually be more interested in finding out about cybersecurity if they even knew it exists. I don't think a lot of people know cybersecurity exists. The first thing, the most common thing
things Psychia is trying to do, like,
you know, oh my God. That's interesting. That's interesting. Everybody, Psyche is trying to do that. Yes. But I want you to explain to me why you think that's happening. Why is hacking more popular than, you know, stopping hacking? It feels like, you know, breaking into people's, you know, internet or whatnot, internet property or whatever is more popular than, or is more, what's the word? Is it admirable? Because if people learn that you're a hacker, people are like, ah, hacker, yes, I have so many things, I'd love you to hack. But if people learn, oh, you're a cybersecurity expert, what's that?
Actually, let me start this way, right? First of all, hacking is not bad.
Okay.
It depends on what you're hacking.
Okay.
And what you are doing, like, if you're accessing something that you're not authorized to access, or like unauthorized access to like computer systems, obviously that's illegal.
Okay.
But like hacking your own Wi-Fi, right? It's your property. You can hack it.
That's. I don't like what you're doing right there.
Most people would not say,
I'm hacking my Wi-Fi. Most people will say that.
so there's actually a field in cybersecurity called ethical hacking. There's penetration testing as well. So what these guys do is they are given permission to hack a company's systems to find out what the vulnerabilities are, or like how those vulnerabilities can be exploited. So that to help the company understand their systems better and to understand how to protect it. So that's hacking for good, right? But if you go around like hacking into companies, stealing data and all that stuff, that's hacking for bad, basically. But even if you're hacking for good, if you hack a company and you say you're doing it for their own good, that's still illegal because you don't have authorization to do that.
Mm.
So hacking, yes, there's people within cybersecurity that hack that are authorized by certain companies to hack them on their behalf.
Mm.
to understand the systems better and to find out, okay, how do we actually protect it?
Yeah.
Right. Hack yourself before the bad guys do it, basically.
Mm.
Yeah. And like, oh yeah, going back to your... Yeah, so hacking is a subset within cybersecurity. And a lot of people trying to get into cybersecurity, they think, or hacking, I mean, penetration testing or ethical hacking is like what most people in cybersecurity do. That's not really true. Like, a lot of people within cybersecurity that are not even very good hackers, but they are very good at their job. There's like cloud security, governance, risk and compliance. There's people that do... There's a place for behavioral science in cybersecurity.
Okay.
There's people that do what's it called? There's cybersecurity consultants. There's people that manage like security operations centers, which is just like monitoring the systems to like see if there's an incident going on so you can react quickly. There's so many fields within cybersecurity. But like you said, hacking is like even more popular than cybersecurity itself.
Yeah.
So I think the problem is Hollywood, like movies, TV series, like it's been portrayed as something, it's been portrayed in a way that the word hacking itself has like a bad connotation to it. And at this point, there's nothing we can do about it, right? Mm-hmm. But the only thing we can do is to try and spread the message, talk more openly about cybersecurity, help people become more aware of these things, because even on a personal level, right, there are some things that you might fall victim to on a personal level, like your Instagram can get hacked if you click on the wrong link and they harvest your credentials. You might click on a phishing link, for instance. Like, there's these things that everybody should, or more people should know about to prevent, you know, those kind of things from happening. But yeah, that's the problem. That's how it's blame it on Hollywood. Yeah.
You mentioned a couple of like other roles or other aspects of cybersecurity. Do you mind listing every possible concept or subgroup or sub anything under cybersecurity, just to give our audience a bit of that I can remember anyway. yeah, of course, so, because I also don't know some of those things you mentioned. So
So let me just start from the most common ones. There's the penetration testers or ethical hackers. I already explained what those ones do. There's the SOC analysts, and SOC means not like socks that you wear on your feet, but the security operations center.
Oh, okay.
That's where that's where all the monitoring tools are, and they have like logs, events, alerts. When there's suspicious activity, they can quickly get on it and investigate. And if it's something that, you know, a serious incident, they can now escalate it. Or if it's something that is maybe a false positive, you know, it's their job to basically ascertain whether any like alert or any activity is actually malicious, and then escalate it to the next level, to be properly addressed. There's people that do incident response. It's closely related to the SOC, but incident response specifically is, if you have an incident response plan in place, you have people that are designated to, like, if something is going down, like, you have to trigger the incident response plan. If it's at midnight, there are people that might be on call to, like, okay, you have to wake this person up. You have to wake this set of people up to come and, like, respond.
So those incident guys, are they specifically for cybersecurity? Because I know other companies too have like incident management, and it's not only for cybersecurity. For instance, I do incident management too.
Oh, what's the incident management?
So it's for my team. No, it's not a big boy. So it's like
incidents.
So that's there are days where I'm on call. So if anything breaks within my team, I'll be the one to...
I understand. So it's kind of similar to that, but focused on cybersecurity. Like,
okay.
if it's a security incident,
okay.
you have a plan in place that that will put in motion when something goes down.
Okay.
There's people that do security awareness, which is like trying to educate
like Psycare.
The company as a whole. Yeah, like Pheasant.
Okay.
Yeah. So what they do is try to educate the company, like people from all departments about cybersecurity, trying to build a security culture within the organization. There's people that do security engineers, right? Security engineers, what they do is put security controls in place.
Yeah.
They look at the organization's security posture as a whole and think of ways that they can plug gaps and implement controls to defend against attacks.
Okay.
There's and like configuration as well, secure configuration of services.
Okay.
And then within security engineering, there's network security engineering, focusing on, of course, networks, application security engineers, cloud security engineers. You get the picture.
Yeah, that's a lot, actually. If you could make it this boss... No, we've really nice.
Yeah, sure. So that we can add it to the show notes, actually.
Yeah, I'll do that. There's also, like, you know, there's DevOps, right?
Yeah.
There's DevSecOps. People that know DevOps, but they know security as well.
There's actually a team like that in my company. I was like, what the hell is this guy doing?
Oh, that's interesting. I've actually never heard of them before. DevSecOps. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, come on, they could have gotten a better name. What the hell?
Oh, what would you rather call them, Emmanuel? What would you rather call them?
I don't know, but that's that name. What? It's so long and it's now abbreviation. So what's the full meaning?
I mean
developer operations security, what?
Developer security operations. Development security.
Security operations. Yeah.
I don't know.
So I'm guessing it has to do with preventing systems from being hacked just because they have like elevated security. Sorry, they have elevated credentials. Things like CI/CD, right?
Yes. So making sure that those things are securely configured, like deployment pipelines. Because again, like if your deployment pipeline gets compromised,
that's the end. Honestly,
you're literally shipping a signed, trusted version of your product that is actually malicious. Which is what happened with the SolarWinds. I'm not even going to get into that. Like that's a long conversation.
Actually, we need you to get into that because we would also like to talk about real life examples of security breaches, you know, that have had really big impacts on the world, right? Because I feel like people need to know that, oh, look, this was a very tiny slip up and then 2 million passwords ended up in hackers' hands, right, and all of that. So I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, tell us about.
Yeah, let's talk about some real life security incidents.
Yeah.
So let me start with the SolarWinds hack. Like when it happened, I was like, "Damn, this is some crazy stuff."
Was this recently?
No, this actually happened towards the end of 2020, but it's still being talked about because it's like was a massive incident. It was like Avengers Endgame stuff, right? And it was that bad mostly because SolarWinds. Okay, let me give you some background story, right? There's SolarWinds. It's a company that provides lots of software for IT systems like networking. They actually also have like security products as well, funny enough.
Okay.
And one of their softwares is called Orion, which is the one that was breached. Okay. There's also a company called FireEye. It's one of the it's one of the most prolific security companies out there. And so they reported, they announced that, yo guys, we've been hacked though.
Okay.
That's what that announcement.
Wait, the security guys announced that they've been hacked.
Yeah, so like it was a There's this thing called Advanced Persistent Threat, APT. Those are like, so if you have your script kiddies, which are the ones, guys that just download scripts off the internet and deface websites, you have like your hackers, you have your organized cybercrime gangs.
Okay.
Then you have your APTs, which those are the ones I talked about, that some of them are state-sponsored.
Okay.
Right? So, you know, they suspected that a particular APT attacked them and stole...
Sorry, what's APT?
Advanced Persistent Threat.
Okay.
They have, like, lots of funding. They have lots of, like, skills, connections, and everything. So, some APT attacked FireEye, stole some tools that FireEye uses to help companies assess their security posture. But those tools can be used to hack companies, right?
Okay.
That's why like FireEye keeps it to themselves. But they hacked, stole some of those tools, hacking tools. And FireEye was like, yo, so something happened though. Something happened though. And then they responded really quickly and they released some tools that you can use to defend against their tools that were stolen, right?
Man.
And then a few days later, FireEye uncovered an attack on SolarWinds. Like, yo, this is what happened. SolarWinds Orion software has been compromised and this shit has gone down for months. It's like, all of you are using compromised versions of the software.
Wow.
And, you know, they named it Sunburst because, I mean, SolarWinds. Security people are good with.
Do they have to name every single attack so people just know that?
They don't have to name it, but it's just like, it makes it more dramatic and stuff.
Attention, please.
You have names like...
Operation Sunburst has begun. Operation Sunburst has begun.
they have like very interesting names like, well, Eternal Blue and stuff. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, this is what happened, and you know, it had already been downloaded in like so many, like thousands of companies had already downloaded like that compromised version. Okay. And you know, at that point it was like, yeah, lots of companies around the world were literally vulnerable to a known malicious software. Mm. And how it happened was their development pipeline was compromised.
Okay, I have a question here. So basically, if whatever software you're using does not have access to the internet, say I download something like VLC Media Player right now and my internet connection is off, flight mode, I'm just watching movies, I have no access to the internet, I'm not updating the software, nothing. Is there still a way that I can get hacked?
Well, not get hacked specifically, but
like, can they get into my VLC or can they get into my system?
Not exactly. Not in the conventional, not in a like, oh, they're hacking you way, but you just downloaded malware onto your laptop way, and the malware is spreading.
Okay.
Deleting important files or encrypting your files.
Okay.
And asking you to pay a ransom.
Okay.
Right.
So is it possible for the ransom to also get access to his network drivers or something and turn them on without you knowing?
Yep. That's also possible. So
The
fact that your internet is turned off doesn't mean you haven't already downloaded something.
Oh wow. That's
actually
scary.
The VLC itself that you downloaded, right? Did you actually download it from VLC themselves, or did you go to like a weird
website?
No, let's just say I downloaded it from VLC, right?
Yeah.
You know. So basically, the only way to not, like someone said, the most secure software is no software. Well, how does that saying go? Like,
you can't get hacked if you don't use the internet. If everything is disconnected. I actually used this in a job interview. they asked him to do a presentation on like, oh, how would you secure a cloud environment?
Mm.
And my slide actually had this meme on it. Can't get hacked.
Did you get the job?
Paper. Like, yeah, I did.
Uh-huh.
Stop using cloud.
Bad. Flex on us. Flex on us, bro.
You asked. I'm not flexing. You asked. And that's why I said, and I used, you know that meme of this guy, roll safe, where he was like,
Yeah. I know.
Think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, there's this attack, real world attack. I also want to talk about. This one is actually something that, I wouldn't even call it hacking, right? But it's an attack, definitely an attack, because it cost two big tech companies.
Okay.
Over $200 million over the course of a few years.
Wow.
How did he do it? So there's this guy in Lithuania, right? He somehow found out that I think it was Facebook and Google. Somehow found out that Quanta Computing is a company based in, I can't remember where they're based in. But it's based in an Asian country, I think. And they actually supply hardware to these big tech companies for their cloud infrastructure and stuff.
Okay.
So he was like, how do I get to these people? He created an identical company called Quanta Computing in Lithuania.
Okay.
So an actual company
in
Lithuania. Use that company to create bank accounts with the company's name, and started like intercepting. It's called business email compromise, sending invoices to employees of, you know, the victim companies. Sending invoices.
So,
like, oh yeah.
Who were the victims? Like these big companies? Was Facebook part? Facebook.
Yes.
Okay.
It was Facebook and Google, I think.
Facebook and Google. Wow. Google doesn't even look like a company that can ever get hacked.
Can be hacked.
Did the guy get jail
time?
So
here's the thing, right? Here's the thing.
Did they catch him?
Let me finish the story. So, yo, stop.
I'm sorry. Bro. My bad.
Why are you skipping to season 4?
My bad. Like, go on.
So, yeah, like, he created fake invoices, sent it to employees of these companies, and, you know, They interact a lot with Quanta Computing, right? To get their hardware and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it looked legit, right?
Yeah.
It's just another invoice for them. I mean, to you, it might sound like it's just an example, right? I don't know what the sizes of each invoice that he sent was.
Yeah.
But just imagine $2 million, and it's like what you do daily, like you approve payments.
Like a company like Facebook or Google.
So your normal suppliers, right? And yeah, this guy, over the years, this guy managed to use that technique to rip them off of like over $200 million. And
wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Eventually, and he was using bank accounts in Quanta Computing's name, his own Quanta Computing that he registered in Lithuania to collect these funds.
Didn't they think, oh my God, this is odd. When did these people change their bank? Didn't they call to ask or whatnot? I don't know.
That's the thing, right? That's why cybersecurity awareness is important. That's why you need to keep training your staff and keeping them informed and just reducing their susceptibility to social engineering attacks. Because this is a kind of social engineering attack called business email compromise.
Yeah.
That's a hush puppy. Anyway, that's a different conversation.
Ooh. Actually, but if we wanted to talk about those set of people from Nigeria and other countries, that would be a totally different episode.
Yeah.
We should probably,
that's a totally different conversation.
Probably to demystify exactly what they did.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. That sounds like a cool episode. I might steal it for Cyber Talk.
No, you won't. You'll be back here. I assure you.
Anyway,
so,
as I was saying, right? Yeah. They eventually like caught up to him, collaborated with Lithuanian police to arrest him, and my guy was shipped to the US visa free, convicted.
Is he still in jail?
It's the scariest thing, though.
I'm not sure. This was quite a while back, so I'm not sure if he's still actually still in jail. Okay.
That's extradition now.
Sure, they'll just deport him back once he serves his jail time.
I
think he would remain in the US jail for long. And they'll maybe turn him to CIA guy or something.
Nah, it's not that. It wasn't that smart, actually. It wasn't that extraordinary. Like, it's not... Yeah, it's not as if he... It's just his social engineering skills that he puts into play.
That's enough trickery. I mean...
It's not like he did some advanced hacking or anything like that. That's the scary part.
The social engineering ones are actually the best. Because it's very hard to detect. Like, you can't prove that somebody stole your password from just talking to you or something. Do you get?
And the thing is, a lot of the time, right, the way people find out that they've been BAC'd is that their supplier calls them maybe 2 or 3 months later that, yo, this payment has been due for a while. What's going on? Where's our payment? That's actually how a lot of companies find out. Hold on, we've sent this like 2 months ago. What's going on? And they realize that they sent it to the wrong account.
That's crazy.
Like, Yahoo boys are like flexing, buying Benz with the money you're supposed to use to pay your suppliers.
That's crazy, man. But, speaking of crazy, we have something crazy for you as well. So, let's talk about a couple of concepts, popular concepts in cybersecurity or terms that you use, right? I just need you to like give us a short definition, maybe 30 seconds, 60 seconds or less, all right? So it's more like rapid fire questions, okay? Are you ready?
Sure.
So
should be fun.
I'm going to say the word and then you're going to like in the shortest way possible. Okay. Phishing.
Phishing is a social engineering technique used to trick people into performing an action. You usually send phishing emails to thousands or maybe even like hundreds of thousands of people.
Okay.
With the expectation that maybe one or two people or like 10 people would click on it. Like, what, you don't need every single person you send it to to be successful. You just need, just need what you need.
Okay. Second term is social engineering.
Social engineering is a set of techniques that people use to manipulate other people into performing an action. So clicking a link, filling a form with your credentials, logging into a duplicated website, giving out information on the phone, you get the picture.
Third term is SQL injection.
SQL injection. Okay, let me know.
Take your time.
Yeah. So social engineering basically is finessing. Let me put it that way. Yeah. It's like, my data has finished too. Chuka.
Okay.
Anyway, SQL injection is basically typing commands into a form that or whatever is sent to a server and tricking the server into running your own commands.
Okay.
Right? Well, it's when the server treats your inputs as actual commands.
Okay.
Instead of just inputs.
And the last one is man in the middle.
Man in the middle attack is an attack where someone is just, snooping in on a connection or a communication, and they might just snoop and eavesdrop, or they might actually like tamper and interfere with what's going on.
Okay.
Or like change information and stuff. Yeah.
So is that why? Yeah. Let's applaud him, please. You did a very good job.
Man in the middle. I just want to give a bit more context. Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
So man in the middle. Nowadays they are trying to like change the term to on path attack.
Okay.
I guess because man in the middle is not progressive enough. I don't know.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Is that why applications like WhatsApp say, oh, end-to-end encryption.
End-to-end encryption.
Yeah.
Well, technically, you could do encryption, right, to prevent man-in-the-middle attacks.
Yeah.
Like, your Wi-Fi, you know, your WPA2, whatever, is encrypted. Hopefully, you're not logging onto free Wi-Fi that's not encrypted or unsecure Wi-Fi.
Okay.
To log into your bank.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot, man. That was good.
So encryption prevents that kind of attack, but end-to-end encryption goes a step further to say, you know, the only parties that can actually get access to this
information. Yeah, the parties involved. Basically.
Exactly. So it's end-to-end. Mm-hmm. It's done between the two or more devices that are communicating.
Okay.
No one else has access to the keys.
Okay, that makes sense.
So, like, WhatsApp themselves can't, like, snoop on, on end-to-end encrypted messages. Yeah.
Mm. So, we talked about hackers as being not necessarily bad people, but people, there are different types of hackers, basically, the way you have good and bad. So,
Jedi,
when I was in 200 level, I installed Linux with the hopes that I was going to be a hacker.
But
I
was actually reading Linux.
So I started off with Ubuntu, then I moved to Kali, and then from there I was trying other things. So I was actually reading a book. I can't remember the title of the book. It was a very big book about hacking. Mm-hmm. I was like, I want to know how to hack. But the best I did was maybe hack like a Wi-Fi that had like a very basic password because it was in the dictionary I was using. So why do you think Linux is a good... first of all, is Linux a good OS for like learning how to be a cybersecurity person? And if so, why is it a good OS for it?
Why is it recommended, you know, by people?
Yeah, everybody says go and download Kali Linux. I know it's a hacker. So, good question. So, cybersecurity is about understanding the principles, about having the skills and everything. The tools that you use actually help, and it helps to know the tools because it helps you to understand, okay, the right tool to use in a particular scenario. But people sometimes conflate that with knowledge about the tools is knowledge of cybersecurity, which is not the case, right? You can't put the something before the something horse.
The horse before the cat, or the cat before the horse.
You get the picture.
I get it now because I just told you what it was.
So it doesn't really, in the real sense, it doesn't really matter what OS you're using. It's just that most of the tools, right, a lot of the tools that, from a hacking perspective, a lot of the hacking tools have better Linux support. There are some things that you try to do. Like, it's not as if there's no Windows version for it too, but trying to do your Windows is just like stressful sometimes.
Yeah.
So Linux knowledge is definitely useful because, you know, command line, terminal, being able to understanding Linux is helpful, but you might be a security engineer and the entire organization is heavily Windows based.
Okay.
And you're literally not doing anything with Linux.
That's interesting.
Windows, Azure Cloud,
true.
Microsoft 365. Everything is Windows. You're using PowerShell and things like that. You're not using Ubuntu or Kali Linux. Right?
PowerShell so it just depends should be destroyed, on... honestly.
Rest. We get it. Use
as a hot pick.
Rest.
No. Like I can use CMD. But that PowerShell, what's the purpose?
PowerShell is not that bad.
It's actually quite powerful.
I guess that's the only thing. Power.
Oh my god.
Commands don't run. The thing is, there's some commands that don't run on PowerShell but run on CMD. So like that's
PowerShell is annoying. It's not the same thing, right? Command
exactly.
PowerShell is kind of is Windows equivalent to Bash or
no. Ah. Bash, like the same commands run on all kinds of terminals on Linux.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know how to explain it.
So speaking of passwords, so like when I was in university, right, there was a time I used to write like the list of websites that I had passwords with. I didn't write the password in the book. I just wrote, okay, google.com, I have password. I'll not write it down. I thought I'd be able to like keep doing that. But by now, I should have maybe hundreds of accounts across services on the internet. Exactly. So yeah.
By the way, join Saikia's waitlist.
Oh my god.
Okay. I'll consider that. So it's difficult to like keep track of everything. And one of the advice I usually give about passwords is that you should use a different password for every service. Now, there was an introduction of vaults. An example is Bitwarden. So how secure do you think those tools are? Because it's kind of like putting all your eggs in one basket. Because if they get access to that, then
LastPass got hacked. I think was it last week?
My company uses LastPass.
But the thing is, don't panic. Yes, they didn't actually get access. Well, so far they don't have any evidence to suggest that they got access. It's
possible.
To passwords, okay. Right? And passwords are encrypted anyway using your master password, right? But they got access to some source code and stuff like that. But the reputational damage has been done. That's the thing with cyber attacks as well. They have the impact goes far beyond the cyberspace, right?
Okay.
The
impact is far-reaching because reputational damage. LastPass is supposed to keep your password secure. They got hacked. The hack didn't involve user data getting leaked. It was source code that got leaked. But that image is there already. A company that is in talks to use LastPass as their enterprise password solution.
They will change their mind.
And just pull out. They'll pull out from deal. Yeah. Like, okay, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go somewhere else. So it has financial impact, reputational damage. It's the amount, what they're actually going to lose is, almost immeasurable because the impact is going to stick for a while.
Mm. There will always be that company that got hacked at the end of the day.
So password vault.
Back to your question. Secure. Yes. So no, it's not let me talk.
Why do people trust password vaults so much? I don't get it.
So the thing is, right? It depends on how it's been implemented. Some password managers or password vaults, like I said, they're not cloud hosted, right? They're stored on maybe on a hardware store, whatever, hardware vault or a local vault or something like that. And like you said, passwords are encrypted using your master password.
Okay.
Right. So they are, no matter what, right? Let's even say you're using a cloud version. I think LastPass is cloud. Let's say you're using a cloud version, it's encrypted and stuff. It's still, in my opinion, way better. It's a much better strategy than just forming your own passwords and reusing passwords everywhere.
Okay.
Do you get?
Okay.
So it's still a much better strategy to protect yourself.
Okay.
Using a password manager.
Okay.
But yeah, of course, look at the different password managers. Choose the one or try and understand how they actually encrypt and keep your password safe as much as you can.
Okay.
Just go with one.
Okay.
Yeah. And the thing
is, in other words, non-technical people are in trouble.
No. You can watch reviews, honest reviews and stuff. I'm not going to recommend anything now because I haven't even done the research understand all the different password managers out there. I'm sure people...
Bitwarden is open source anyways. So I don't know if that counts as it.
Even
worse. Yeah, it's open source meaning so it's on GitHub. It's open to... No.
Okay. My bad.
Your passwords are on GitHub, Chuka. It's open to... It's open to scrutiny. It means people can actually go and look at the source code, understand what's actually happening,
and hack it.
And like, it means it's probably, I would probably be more comfortable using it
since I know how it works. And stuff.
Like Signal is open source, and
but
you know
do
that
you read all like Signal's source code.
No, I won't. Just because... I know there are people that do that. There are like people that
that would use, yeah,
the open source community like scrutinizes stuff like that. And you know, end-to-end encryption actually uses the Signal protocol. Most chat apps that use end-to-end encryption use Signal protocol. So the Signal app is different from like the end-to-end encryption protocol that they use, which is still called Signal anyway. So yeah, like if reusing passwords, right, is very dangerous because, I mean, you use like the chances that your Google account gets hacked or your password gets leaked, unless you fill efficient form or something, is relatively low, right? Mm. But let's say you're using that same password on like 100 different other services. Let's say you use the same password on Canva or something. And no offense to people that use Canva. And Canva gets breached and your password gets leaked, right? That password is already out there. And if someone gets hold of that password, sure, the best believe that they are going to try it on all your other accounts, as many accounts as they can, right? And that's it. It's gone. Canva actually got breached in 2019. I know because I have a Canva account. They didn't notify. I didn't see any email saying, "Oh, we've been breached. Oh, your password has been leaked." It was a year later when I used this online service, put in my email, and they told me, "Yeah, you've been involved in your details have been involved in a data breach.
What?
Change your passwords and everything."
How do they know this?
You can actually do that right now. I'm going to send a link to you.
Okay.
It's called "Have I Been Pwned?"
Oh, crazy. I did not know this. Do you think, you know, startups and companies that have been breached, you know, do you think they have a support group where you're like, "Hi guys, my name is Canva. I was breached yesterday. Hello Canva, welcome to the group." You know, you can share with us how you felt, you know, and all of that. Because, you know, you just said, "Oh, Canva was breached in 2019. Facebook, that was probably 20. And people are just, how many of these companies have been breached? And do you think like companies that have never been breached, they are walking around campus like, "Yeah, no, ain't nobody can touch me, man. I'm like the OG of this." I just think that would be funny. They should make a Netflix series on that. Hey, Netflix,
yeah.
Can you hear me?
So if you... I sent a link.
Okay.
Have I Been Pwned? PWNED.
We would include that in the show notes.
Do it now. Like, I want to see your reactions.
Okay, have I been pwned?
Put your email address and see.
Okay, I'm going to do that right now. God, please don't let them pwn me, please.
I'm like 90% sure you'll see at least two instances of your data being leaked. It might not be password. So usually when there's a data breach, sometimes
it's actually Canvas.
So there are a couple of products now, or like websites out there, that, you know, to log in, you don't have to put a password again. They send you a verification code to your email, right?
A magic link.
Yeah, magic link, exactly. What do you think? Is that best practice? Should people be allowed to do that? Because if someone has access to your email, then...
Passworders protect us.
What?
It's just like magic spell.
Oh, no.
Magic
no.
Link.
No. So, like, is that what do you think about people that are implementing magic links more and more now? Is that something you do in your app on Pheasant?
So, passwordless, no comments. passwordless authentication is becoming a big thing now. Like, major, you know, Microsoft, Apple, Google are all like, you know, trying to push it. Adoption is the biggest issue here.
Yeah.
But passwordless authentication is something that's, you know, gaining ground now. And I think it's fascinating because it means it takes away that attack vector of the passwords.
Mm.
But the passwordless authentication systems themselves have to be well protected, because that's like like that's another, you're closing one attack vector, but
opening up another, you're one
potentially opening up another one, right? But in terms of, you know, user experience, I think passwordless is good, because for instance, let's say you have a password policy that you enforce. If a user wants to write to create an insecure password, they will. If you like put, oh, you have to add a special character, they'll just put their card's name with a capital, starting with a capital letter, and put 123 and put like two special characters or whatever it is.
That's Ali's password, everybody. Like,
you get what I'm saying? Yeah.
That's Ali's password, yes. Card's name, two special characters, and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think passwordless authentication is something that has, you know, a lot of potential.
Mm.
I hope it is implemented properly, and we don't end up opening more holes, but okay, we'll see.
Okay, Ali, I'd like to ask you how someone would most likely get into cybersecurity. I have a couple of friends that are looking to get into tech, but when you mention software development, they're like, nah. Design, nah. You know, you mention every other thing, they're like, they're actually really fascinated with cybersecurity and they'd like to learn how to get into it. You know, there are not a lot of courses out there and schools or whatnot, but like,
very good question.
So how would you advise someone?
Very good question. Yeah. Step one, go to Psycheard.
Of course. I was expecting this.
Psycheard.com.
CYKEA. Okay. So apart from Psycheard, what else? What else? Of
Underbird.
Oh, do you have a thing for birds or something? It's just, I think you do.
Why the tone that you said, no, that is, you, very sus. So I'm not going to answer that question.
No, like, do you love birds? Do you love birds? That's what I'm saying.
I mean, who doesn't? Right?
Some people don't like. Do you like turkey? Turkey is a bird, though. Tolo.
Well, I like grilled turkey, so.
Please, how did cybersecurity come from turkey?
That is discrimination. That is discrimination right there. All right, so apart from Psyche, anyway, what other advice would you give someone trying to get cybersecurity? You know, myths that you think they should remove from their mind, things they think you think they should focus on earlier in their career.
Well, first of all, there are lots of resources out there, right? Okay. A lot of them are free, some of them are paid. There's a lot of information out there. So the first step is actually be focused in your learning, right? If you start something, find a good course, Sakia. Find a good course, start it, and stick to it.
Okay.
Right? Don't go and start. Go and start five different courses at the same time and just never finish anything.
Okay.
Because it's easy to do that, because there's a lot to learn. So
okay,
don't start digging yourself into different rabbit holes.
Okay.
Right. Have that focus. That consistency is very good. A lot of things that apply to people getting into software development also apply if you're getting into cybersecurity. Okay. That consistency, you need to be consistent with your learning, understand what your learning style is.
Okay.
Mm. And you know, understand what works for you and just stick to it, right? You can't say because
that's so easy to say.
I'm telling you. I'm telling you. But it's the hardest thing.
You can't say because
do.
Like
yeah.
You can't say because this influencer learner on Twitter says, oh, I do five hours a day.
I came for violence today.
Nah. I don't
you also become an influencer too.
No, very soon.
Anybody that leaves this podcast becomes an influencer automatically, because you know your phone will start blowing up.
So yeah, don't say because like someone does 5 hours, I have to do 5 hours. Like if it's 1 hour a day, it's much better than forcing yourself to do 5 hours and then next day you don't have energy to do anything again. You've lost that momentum. So it doesn't matter how much you do, it's about like how consistent you are.
Okay. Any,
you know, listening to cybersecurity podcasts to learn about what's happening.
Let me guess, like the one you just said.
Yeah, cyber talks.
Any books, any any books you'd recommend, any courses or certificates, like certificate programs or something that people should look into?
So there's three things. I haven't thought of three things. I'm just saying three things because it's like, I'm just going
to. It's more profound.
But there's three things. Yeah. I'll find the third one. Don't worry. There's three things that you need to take into consideration to get into cybersecurity. Number one is the knowledge, of course, like learning. Number two is hands-on skills, right? Like, if you want to go on an AppSec engineer, right? Start using those tools. Start hacking into web apps. Authorized, of course. There's lots of like web apps that you can download and hack on your own. Mm. Don't go and start hacking into PGRS or something. Like gain those hands-on skills. Then the third one is certifications. Like you mentioned, certifications are important because they show that you're actually serious, that you're actually passionate about it, and it actually validates your knowledge as well.
Okay.
So Computer Security Plus is a good one.
Okay.
Because it covers like all the bases within cybersecurity. It doesn't go very in-depth.
Okay.
But if you successfully get Computer Security Plus certified, right, it gives you the base knowledge that you need, and then you can now start getting down into the details more. And when you're doing certifications, please make sure you actually like pass the certification. I actually understand the content. Don't go and use dumps and get the certificate just for getting it, right? Because once you have that certification, it's a good thing because you might get it to interviews and stuff. But it also, with great power comes.
Chris, what's
I don't
me?
Know. You, yes.
Thanks, Uncle like, Ben.
Yeah, if they see Computer Security Plus on your CV, there's some certain things that they expect you to know.
Yeah.
Because literally, you have to study them to pass.
Yeah, so don't cram and pour, basically.
Right? Don't cram and pour. Don't go and use dumps. Don't cheat. Like, there's no shortcut to this, right? And, stay consistent, really. Like, that consistency is going to make a lot of difference.
Thanks,
man. And yeah, start applying for jobs. Doesn't matter. I don't care how early you are. Start applying for jobs. Like, you can't lose from applying for jobs.
But you lose all the time.
Like,
the worst they can say is no.
Exactly, right? You're not losing.
Yeah, they reply with you.
No. So, like, it gives you... by applying for jobs, you're learning more about the industry.
Yeah.
You're learning more about... You're looking at those job descriptions. You're trying to look at, okay, these are the skills that I need to learn, right?
Yeah.
Who knows? You might even get an interview. You might even get a job from it. Yeah. But temper your expectations, of course.
Yeah.
And go and look at salaries on LinkedIn. That would help.
For extra ginger. I feel you, man. Feel
for extra ginger. Go and look at salaries.
I think I should also go and check.
Emmanuel, can you face your work, please? I'll send this episode to your manager.
It doesn't mean your first. doesn't mean you get that salary your first role.
I will get it.
At least, you know that there's something to look forward to.
I am determined.
Ali, we are so glad we had you on this episode, on this podcast today. We're really glad you came around. We've actually come to the end of the episode. But before we let you go, we'd like to ask you...
Oh, finally, I can go and eat.
Yes, you can. But we'd like to ask you a very personal question, which we ask every other person that comes on the show for the first time. And the question is, what would you be doing if you were not in tech, if you never got into cybersecurity, never found that startup, never did anything? Like, what would you be doing if your life never took that tech route? Yeah. What do you think you'd be into right now?
Interesting. So when you said personal question, I was already like, oh my god, this guy wants to socially engineer me.
But I should have dragged it. I should have dragged it a little bit. Oh.
But yeah, first thing that comes to mind is I'll probably be a trap artist in Kuwait.
Really? What?
But actually, that's not actually what I would be doing.
What would you be doing?
But I'm never going to take up. I don't know. Like, maybe I'll be on this farm somewhere.
You should actually think
about
it.
Are you one of those code farmers?
Huh?
There's one guy that says that if it's not coding, it will be a farmer.
Yeah, coding is inside.
Maybe I might actually be a farmer. I can't think of anything.
Interesting.
Yeah, the first guess.
There's a point in my life.
Well, we're going to go with trap artists for you. That is what we're putting down. When we make our compilation, we're putting trap artists for you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can drop bars.
No, we're good. We're good. Thank you so much for coming. It's fine. It's fine, man. It's fine.
You know I used to write lyrics.
No. We're good, man. We're good. We're good.
I'm actually serious.
We're good, man. We're good.
I'm serious now.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Remember, we release new episodes every other Wednesday, and you can subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcast, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. If you would love to connect with us, you can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Inside the Techos, or subscribe to our newsletter and shoot us an email at insidethetechosystem@gmail.com. We love hearing from our listeners. You can follow the host on Twitter as well, Chuka at CYDUGU and Emmanuel at Olaluwa_98. All right, see you in the next one.